Welcome, everyone, to the Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me is, look, I can't lie, it's totally Pete. Hello, Pete.
I cannot be improved upon. The Runaways Rundown podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 211, Last Waltz, is brought to you by Blueberry Pecan Pancakes. Better than those little vegan sausages that taste like cardboard.
Pete, here it is, the week in which the sun sets and a new star rises. We're talking Runaways 211 today, 212 Wednesday, 213 on Friday. We also have the return of Star Trek Discovery on Thursday. We'll be podcasting that next weekend. Of course, Godfriended Me continuing on Mondays. And here we are, Pete, the week that we wrap up Runaways, we start Discovery. Of course, we'll be doing a Runaways season recap. Not recap, but season wrap. I guess this time next week, right? So whatever your thoughts were, dear listeners, about the season, be sure to share those between now and the end of the season.
I'd say no rest for the weary, except I'm not tired.
Nor am I, Pete, even with some of the behind-the-scenes trickery of recording these just a tad early. I'm raring and ready to go, Pete. Take us to the episode recap.
An elderly homeless woman is offered an energy bar by a younger woman as she stares at a Church of Gaborim billboard featuring the Dean family. As she accepts it, she runs her hand down the younger woman's forearm and, after she leaves, has assumed her appearance and leaves her shopping cart behind. Leslie sits in the reconditioning chair impatiently, refusing to let the light enter her. She mocks Frank's acting as well as his cause in keeping the pretend church open. Frank has her taken to a waiting van bound for the crater. At the Yorks', old Lace yearns for freedom as Gert and Chase are brought breakfast. Gert won't be gaslit, but Chase chugs the OJ and passes out comically. With all the strike team's weaponry laid out, Molly tries to light a candle. Alex catches her and says he's been unable to locate Gert and Chase at hospitals. He's going to search urgent cares, but that could take all day. Alex sees she was attempting to light a candle in a snowball because yesterday was her birthday, her quinceañera, to be exact. But that's way too old-fashioned for her, and you need a family. Family! That's where Chase would have taken a sick dinosaur, and only the Yorkses would know what to do with old Lace. Carolina checks on Nico, but she asks her to go. Carolina hears the female voice again before Alex and Molly tell her they think they know where to find Gert and Chase. Nico's too sick, but Carolina's in. Leslie rides alone in a van to the crater where a statue of the Gaborim towers over spirals of white rocks. As members bow to her, Leslie tells them the church is a lie. Aura and Francis bring her to S4E2R, who sees her and loves her. All Leslie wants is water. S4E2R gives her a new bracelet and her contract that calls for her submission to indoctrination for an undetermined amount of time. Leslie hasn't had any sleep, and S4E2R tells her that she can't use anyone's name going forward. From now on, Leslie will be known as L3D5E. Like Chase before her, Leslie passes out. Dale mansplains sodium thiopental before injecting Chase, who thinks he's dreaming. He can't tell them secrets beyond loving their daughters, too. Stacy scares Chase. Tina rings the doorbell and lets herself in as the Wisey Alpha user. Pride sent her to check on them. The young woman from the very beginning of the episode has arrived at the Church of Gaborim campus and tells Vaughn she's looking for Carolina Dean. Her and everyone else, because Vaughn says she's amazing. The woman asks for something Carolina has touched so she can find her, but Vaughn is alarmed and the woman disappears before he can get her name. S4E2R gives Leslie a scalp massage when she comes to, but she's not ready to surrender. S4E2R tells Leslie that if David Eller could see her now, he'd be disgusted. She says her father believed in the truth and would want the church destroyed, but S4E2R tells her she can't destroy the church because she doesn't have an army big enough. And her new baby couldn't handle the stress. Chase knows who the president is and tells the Yorkses he's been sleeping with Gert, but they got in a fight and are back together, he thinks. They had some great times together, naked. Old Lace and Gert might be connected, but Chase isn't sure which is the animal, if you know what I mean. Tina gets pushy and Chase passes out again. Dale takes her phone and Stacy orders her to the basement at gunpoint. Dale suggests she listen because Stacy's been on edge lately. Victor meets Janet after a doctor's appointment with a clean bill of health, no sign of the brain tumor or gunshot wound. Victor is beginning to think they made a mistake by killing genius Jonah. Janet came from a pride meeting where she delivered the new weapons, including light-reflecting thermal material that would win Victor a Nobel Prize. Janet even got to show off her knowledge of wave theory for fun. Janet has doubts they're doing the right thing and thinks an emotional appeal would be better. She then makes an intellectual appeal to the brilliant Victor Stein. Alex, Molly, and Carolina arrive at the Yorkses and find the rolls. Alex brought the fistigons, the X-ray goggles, and one of the strike team's guns. Chase comes to in the basement with a headache, and Tina tells Gert that Chase told her parents about their cool bed they were naked in. Tina lets her hair down and gets down on those pancakes. She tells them Pride is declaring war on them with new weapons. She advises them to run away while they still have time. But the Yorkses have Old Lace, and Tina says if she dies, they can just bioengineer a new one. But Gert realizes Tina hasn't even asked about her daughter. Sirens sound as Alex, Carolina, and Molly enter. The Yorkses wish Molly a happy belated birthday, but she says they're not her parents. Her real parents would never hurt Gert, Old Lace, and Chase. Alex holds them at bay with the fistigons as Molly and Carolina break into the basement. Tina finds out AWOL is MIA. Carolina holds Tina at bay with her light. Molly rips the door out to free Old Lace, but Dale is able to tranquilize her. Outside, Gert can't tune into her, and Molly doesn't want them to leave without Old Lace. Gert believes she'll be able to find them. Nico makes a hole in a wall, performs a Wiccan ceremony, and drops the staff in to sever her ties with it. Leslie breaks into a storage room and reads S4E2R's file, which contains photos of her with a baby girl. Leslie goes to S4E2R and explains she didn't tell anyone she was pregnant because she didn't want to face it herself, and her greatest fear is failing as a mother again. It seems Susan, Leslie's mother, was brought there because she tried to protect her from Jonah's interest in her. But the use of her name angers Susan, and now she has to report Leslie to the guards. Dr. Novak's office calls Victor about his missed appointment. Janet comes in and he explains he's using the phone lines to find the kids. How is it possible he's getting even smarter? Back at the hostel, Molly wonders how she's going to make it to 16. She recaps all the terrible things they've been through. Alex resolves to throw her a quinceañera. Nico rejoins them, but they can't have a party without Old Lace. They'll just have to have another party once Old Lace returns. At a market, Molly finds a dress, shoes, and a tiara. Alex buys a bunch of string lights. Chase buys a bunch of boxes of Hostess snowballs. The girls search for music for Molly's waltz and discuss who will be her chambellan. Alex and Chase rejoin them. Molly asks Chase to be her chambellan. The shape-shifting woman finds Carolina and introduces herself as Zaven. Carolina asks if she knows her, and Zaven tells her she's been looking for her and touches her arm before disappearing when Gert calls her over. The woman's disembodied voice tells Carolina it was nice to meet her. Back at the hostel, Alex and Chase set up for the party as they discuss the symbolic stuffed animal Chase has for her as the last toy of her childhood. Alex reminds him their parents are murderers. Chase doesn't think they can win. Alex is determined to bring them to justice no matter what. The girls get Molly ready with her makeup. She cannot be improved upon. As Chase puts on a tuxedo, he answers the phone and talks to his father, who tells him his mother doesn't know, but he's really sick. He thought he was getting better, but he's not, and he wants to see him before time runs out. Alex interrupts, but does not see the phone. Gert recalls the moment her parents told her Molly would be her sister. So much better than a puppy. She didn't just get a sister, but a hero. Chase wheels in a cake made of snowballs and dedicates their dance to her birth parents. As confetti falls and the kids dance, Chase walks away. The Yorkses talk about how Tina's been acting odd lately. Dale tells Stacy he doesn't know if he forgives her. Old Lace roars, and Dale floats, putting the dinosaur down. Stacy says no. She plans to release and follow her to the runaways. Then they'll kill Old Lace. Gert goes to see Chase and thank him, but discovers he's packing to leave. She calls him a coward. The rest of the group confronts him, and he thanks them for helping him to grow up through their friendship. They taught him he doesn't have to go along with the group, and being there just doesn't feel right anymore. Chase walks the streets of L.A. and finds his parents in front of a liquor store.
Pete, the villains in this episode, we of course get introduced to Zaven, who I dare say does not have villainous blood on her hands yet.
I mean, she touched Carolina, and we could only assume not just wanting to be able to find her by touching something she had come into contact with, but now has the ability to shape shift into Carolina. So that can't be good.
She has a nice screen presence. I buy that she is... you know, partially not of this world. So kudos there to actress Clarissa Thibodeau for just, I don't know, I feel like she nails that Zaven character. Pete, moving on, the Yorks is maybe the most villainous force in this episode, what with kidnapping, drugging, and then, of course, threatening to shoot Old Lace.
I mean, if anything happens to that dinosaur, I mean, yes, Tina did discuss the very real story possibility. This is a bioengineered dinosaur. However, it's the only one in the story. I don't think you just go down to the corner market and get, you know, new components to bioengineer your dinosaur. And, you know, we've come to know and love Old Lace. You know, obviously, Stacy is the more worthy of being on this list of the Yorkses, but that Dale even floats that possibility on top of injecting Chase with the sodium thiopental. Yeah, they're awful parents.
taking Stacy out of the mix for a moment, not knowing her exact mental state or how much is Stacy versus, as you termed last episode, not Stacy, the alien force. Dale is certainly, I think, a great example of someone who's on this slippery slope where the individual pieces make sense. You know, we want to get the truth out of Chase, but then you kind of step back and go, again, kidnapping, drugging, things like that. It's a it is a terrible situation. Speaking of people causing those who are captured to be in trouble, Pete, it's the just that the lovely name of the character, S4E2R. I guess they didn't want to give us anything that was too easy to say.
Yeah, we're going to call her Susan here, Leslie's mother. I had an inkling we were going to wind up seeing her. They planted those seeds several episodes back, the flashback when David Eller died. We can assume at the crater that he passed away because of, you know, the kind of setting, although it's not explicitly stated. And the idea that the mother had been sent away and may have been there, but not around for her husband or her ex-husband's death and everything that came with that, I think really interesting from a characterization sense.
Oh, I very much agree. I think that the return of mom here, who we also could call TK421, I just want to throw that out there as a possibility, just to have her back in the mix and what that can do dramatically, I think is certainly well-timed, given that we are down to the last couple episodes here.
Yeah, you do not go out and get actress Kathleen Quinlan, probably most notable from Apollo 13. She played Tom Hanks' wife back on Earth, really held it together in that story for nothing, just for some brainwashed lady. And the second I saw her, I'm like, all right, this is going to wind up being Leslie's mom. And of course it was. The reconditioned or, you know, brainwashed aspect of it, and then how bent out of shape she gets with the mention of her name, you got to wonder if she's been stripped down to the point she doesn't even realize Leslie is her daughter anymore. But we'll talk theories in a bit.
Pete, last villain on the list is Tina. Again, a little bit of a gray area. Is it Tina or not? But the body known as Tina causing some trouble in this episode as well.
Really interesting that she would tell the kids that not Tina would tell the kids that Pride's coming for them. One, as if they didn't expect it. And two, what kind of advantage does it give the aliens at this point? Do they have their sights set on something else?
Well, I mean, let's flip it now to theories on that very topic, Pete. We're approaching this point in the season where if we want to start to set up things for a potential third season, you know, of course, no renewal news yet. But I kind of feel like, not for nothing, it's a Marvel show on Hulu. Hulu is going to be a majority run Disney thing when the Fox deal closes. I feel like it's win-win-win for there to be more, let alone those rumors out there of a Cloak and Dagger Runaways crossover, whatever is going on there. So are we setting up some larger alien threads for the next two episodes or for beyond?
Well, I got to wonder, does Zavin's first embodied appearance here signal a shift? Could there be different interests amongst the aliens? Is this one have a different agenda than Jonah?
That's a really compelling question, and of course, every drama needs its conflict. So that could be a rich source of story for the coming episodes. Pete, a small one here, as you mentioned, out in the desert, there's a sculpture, a statue of one of the Gaborim creatures. I'm really looking forward when we do our season two wrap up. I will have finished reading a whole chunk of Runaways comics and kind of talking about that adaptation process. But it was really neat. You know, in the comics, there's multiple Gaborim creatures, and I think they live in the, you know, under the earth or in the earth's core or something like that. They're these, you know, massive, massive things.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's not appropriate for just, you know, a TV show of this scale to have that kind of weirdo stuff out there. You know, they've made changes to make the story a bit more grounded. But really, really nice to be like, oh yeah, but this church is also based on these creatures, whether it's in myth or whether it's from a long time ago or whether it's because Jonah has dealt with them or whatever it is. It's a nice kind of connective tissue back to the source material.
Absolutely. I know there were some people that were speculating we would find them in the hole as far back as the first season. And I think they were wise not to go with the one-to-one comic book route. But here, as a pretty hardcore reference, I know I texted you once we had seen this episode and like, oh, did you see the reference? And you weren't even sure what I was alluding to. So, you know, when they get to the crater there and that statue, that comes right out of the pages of the comic. I was curious if you had even seen that yet, now that you're reading some of the older issues.
Yeah, I guess I, for whatever reason, when you said reference, I was looking for something spoken, but there it is, one of the Gaborim. And Pete, sticking with the COB, the Church of Gaborim, I understand that even in-universe, their origin is a fiction, but is the church itself that bad? Are the rank-and-file members guilty of reprogramming and murder and things like that, or are most of them just kind of into optimism and soup kitchens?
I think there's a very clear line between brainwashing and being complicit in this kind of abuse, similarly to the way Scientology has been accused and proven to have set up centers like this where they bring people back into their faith. If we want to even call it that, I mean, Scientology does not have tax exempt status among the United States government because it doesn't have enough members. But darn if they aren't trying.
Well, I'll just mention as a side note that it's weird to be visiting Hollywood and you're walking down Hollywood Boulevard where there's, you know, little, you know, touristy shops, or there's, you know, take a tour of the Kodak Theater. I guess not the Kodak Theater, but, you know, where they do the Oscars. And then half a block down, there's like, hello, would you like to take a free tour of this building? No, thanks. And you kind of realize, oh, that's how they're getting people in there to talk to them about Scientology, as opposed to, you know, other religions where it's like, hey, would you like to hear about my religion? But Pete, bringing it back to the world of Runaways here, I guess not exactly theories for me here, just a couple of trivia type things. Couldn't help but note that in multiple episodes we've had the church worker Vaughn, and then there's also been references to Coach Alfana. That must be names taken from Runaways comics creators Brian K. Vaughn and Adrian Alfana.
I did not realize the Alfano connection. That's pretty interesting. How about Leslie suddenly being pregnant, Matt? And my question for you, who is the baby daddy?
There was this moment where I was like, okay, I know it's been a busy time of year. I know that we've been recording these in, you know, in a pretty fast succession here. Did I miss something? Did I miss a thing? Did I click on the right episode? What's going on? No, it is the grand story reveal. I will say, I guess in retrospect, I've been aware of her wearing somewhat looser clothing. But yeah, kind of the surprise reveal here. As to who is the baby daddy, I mean, Pete, I feel like all this season they've been too busy to get down to Clown Town, the parents have. So does that mean it predates the Runaways running away? I don't know. I feel like this is a big X factor, and I'm certainly not saying story foul. It's just, hey guys, you threw me a mystery with only two episodes to go.
I have to wonder if it's Jonah's baby, and if it is, what avenues that opens up as far as storytelling.
Certainly the fact that she is at this reprogramming center, and now we know that she is responsible for more than her own well-being. That's That certainly is good use of kind of story material to up the ante.
Now, Matt, the year we're recording this now matches the year we're releasing it. It's 2019. Last year was 2018. And from time to time, over 302 episodes of Marvel TV that we've podcast now, two more to go to be completely caught up. We have been made to think about the political state of the MCU. Obama is name-checked in Luke Cage. We also have President Ellis. Is President Ellis, or is someone else president currently in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, or did they disappear when Thanos snapped?
All right. Well, a couple of thoughts. It's 2019. Yes. But let's not forget that if Runaways season one took place in 2017, this is still 2017. So that's number one. We'll take the 2019 date, bring it back 2 years. Second of all, and this is something that I know that we've discussed, I believe, on the Luke Cage podcast, but for old and new listeners, let me take you through the logic here. So Obama is name-checked, and we know that Matthew Ellis is president by
Iron Man
2000. 30. Yeah, 2010 or so. Or 2011.
Iron Man 3 takes place in 2013.
All right, there you go. So he's firmly ensconced as president there. We could infer then that Obama was elected president in 2008. The Battle of New York happens and reshapes the political landscape. There's reference that Ellis makes to having been elected on a single issue, that of kind of this post-Battle of New York, aliens are out there, I feel unsafe kind of thing. So, therefore, if he's elected 2012, he still could be president until 2020, assuming he was reelected in 2016. There's no evidence to suggest that he was not reelected. I would have to go back and check, Pete, but I think that he has shown up in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. maybe since 2016. I don't quite remember, but I think that unless the story in this show or any other show wants to make hay out of another president, no pun intended with the hay, although it does work nicely. But joking aside, unless they want to name check another fictional character or a reality, I mean real character, then I'm just going to go under the assumption that the fake president that they gave us in 2013 in Iron Man 3, who has then shown up in other MCU works, I'm going to assume that he is still president.
Well, thank goodness we already made Harlem great again. Matt, does Tina and or Stacy recognize one another? We don't see it happen. Stacy says later to Dale that Tina's acting strange, but Stacy escorted Tina to the basement with the gun on her. Did they have, are we going to see later what occurred in between? Did they hug like Victor and Tina did and realize they're aliens and it's all going to be okay?
I think that what we need in the next two episodes is either a scene like that that really makes these gray areas clear, or we need some bit of dialogue, like, just to make it clear, like, oh man, sometimes I'm Bleeblock the alien, and sometimes I'm Stacy, as we wrestle for control of this husk, which explains, in retrospect, why I put the gun on you, because it was alien Tina to real Stacy and vice versa. I can only assume, Pete, that the show wants things to be vague at this point. And if it suits the drama for it to be alien and human in one thing, or both aliens and they're playing a ruse, it just needs to be made clear. We were talking before about the possibility of setting up some storylines for season three. This is something that cannot linger to season three. It just needs to be clear. Otherwise, it looks sloppy, even if there is on the whiteboard somewhere some, like, you know, here's where they're both aliens, this, this, not the other. It needs to be communicated to us at home.
First off, if Bleeblock does not get spoken on screen, I will be referring to at least one of the aliens as Blee Block, and it needs to become a thing. Hashtag make Blee Block alien.
Yes, make Blee Block alien again. What other theories do you have, Pete?
Can we actually have Old Lace die on this show?
You certainly can, now that the trapdoor of we can always clone another. That made me sit up and say, ooh, like, if it's that easy, you know, by being like, 2 months later, or like, congrats, kid, we did the advanced grow thing. Now it only took a week. Like, there's the story space to both kill her and not kill her. We can Groot, if you will, if it doesn't offend anyone for us to mention Guardians of the Galaxy, that is to say. Any of those tender ears.
like a Chia Groot? Can we regrow Old Lace?
Indeed we can, Pete. In fact, I have a Chia Groot growing upstairs right now.
I know you do. I've seen pictures of it on your Instagram.
So yeah, not a metaphor, a real Chia Groot.
Chia.
Yeah, I'm excited. So what is the ultimate story effect? If they kill Old Lace 1.0 and then make a new one just in time for season 3, I mean, look, I don't forget the kind of moral, ethical, animal soul end of things. Do we end things with a new Old Lace or the old Lace? Either way, yes.
Here's the way, if I'm in the writer's room, Matt, it gets pitched. We Wrath of Khan Old Lace. She is instrumental in getting them out of some danger. Okay. And Old Lace transfers its dinosaur soul into one of the runaways, who then begins to act strangely, or maybe even one of the aliens. Okay. And then later they're able to bring a new dinosaur into existence, and we bring the memories, the personality back into Old Lace in season 3 in the search for Old Lace.
Well, Pete, this is why they need to get you in the writer's room right away. We know who that person could be. Old Lace already has the psychic connection with Gert, so that's where it could go. And then here's what you do. You do an online-only, like, mini episode, like an 8 or 10-minute episode, if that long, in between seasons 2 and 3. I say online only. I guess I'd momentarily forgotten Hulu is only online only. So whatever, you make it this kind of, you know, runaway short episode or whatever, and it's Gert dealing with the two personalities. So she'll be like, no, I need to go scavenging for dumpster food. And then all of a sudden, like, Old Lace takes over and she's like, rah, running around and pretending to be a dinosaur. It could be terrible.
We see her in a watering hole trying to book passage to the Genesis planet in the Mutara sector. It could be, you know, just a complete crossover homage, but I digress. How about the staff that Nico puts into the wall and severs her ties with? We're never going to see that again, right?
Pete, it was a hole in a wall and it went clink, clank, clunk down into what must be 15 feet, maybe 20. There's no way that a human person could possibly go down 15 feet in a hole in a house to get a thing out of a hole that is a super powerful weapon. It's gone forever. RIP, magic wand, which will probably be back by episode 213, if not 212.
Last one from me here, Matt. Is Victor really sick again, or was this the alien inside him manipulating Chase?
Well, if Victor wasn't healed, then why would the doctor be so urgently trying to get him to reschedule his appointment? It could be because Earther doctors will run tests to show that there's the alien brain parasite.
That's exactly what I think it is. They would see different, physical signs, and you know, maybe an EKG or, you know, EEG, electroencephalogram of the brain would show, oh my God, there's an overlay here. There is another consciousness. But I don't think he's sick again. I think we've you know, left that story.
Unless we're setting up like, you know, like what is the flavor of this show? Do they want to say, hey, pound of flesh, we need to kill off three parents, like just for dramatic reasons, not, you know, because of money or whatever, just like there needs, you know, we can't constantly do all these parents going after all these kids. There needs to be a before and an after type event. Maybe it's the killing of some parents along the way. Although I kind of do doubt that. I'm just putting it out there as a theory.
Well, Matt, unlike parents that might disappear, the good people of patreon.com/fantasticgeek keep us from disappearing.
Pete, at the stroke of midnight, we posted a little thank you to our patrons as the new year came, as people are listening to this couple weeks ago, week and a half ago. We also gave a little clue as to some future plans that might be happening in 2019 in terms of podcasting properties. And that desire to continue to grow, to continue to stretch into new areas is something that we know all our listeners support, but it's made possible by those who go to patreon.com/fantasticgeek and make sure that all our back stuff, all our future stuff, all our present stuff stays there on the interwebs forever.
Everybody who contributes gets access to exclusive podcast content. Just $1 a month will get you there. And then there's all sorts of packages. You can pay any amount of money and receive something that I've touched to clone your own Pete.
Think how fun that would be to have your own Pete. With that, Pete, let's turn the crank. Are you ready to hear from Fred in the Netherlands?
Always.
Hello, Matt and Pete. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Runaways Season 2, Episode 11. What an emotional episode. A lot of fun around the birthday party of Molly becoming 15, but also what Chase is going through. I really wonder how this will go further. If he will stay away with the group, probably not, and he gets disappointed again by his parents. During the episode, I was very worried Chase would leave before Molly's birthday party, but he stayed and left afterwards. So that was a relief. I was very worried that Molly would be very, very disappointed. Okay, she was now at the end, but at least he had that party. I noticed a big difference between him and Alex. He indeed getting a little older and see everything more relatively. Although their parents are bad, they kill people, etc. But he still can see the good sides of him, of them, and not only of his own parents, but also about Dale and Stacy. That Stacy is, for me, quite out of character. If we see her up to, let's say, season 2, episode 8 or something like that, 9, she was really in character. And she's now so different that I really suspect that she is also perhaps possessed by an alien. On the other hand, she had no click, no connection when Tina was in their house. And I really wonder if, and of course everybody does, if Victor is really sick or it's just a trick to get Chase at home. And he actually follows Janet's advice by playing it emotionally instead of technically. Okay, that was a short feedback for this episode. Two to go. Greetings. All the best. Fred from the Netherlands. Oh yeah, and I really want to compliment Fantastic Geek with their 159 releases in 2018. I think this is really, really impressive. Big, big compliments, guys. I already find it quite hard to find the time to watch and give daily feedback for this last 11 days. For Runaways. Greets, Fred.
Well, Pete, certainly nice words there from Fred. Luckily, we've been able to use some of the time off this holiday season to get ahead of the old release schedule. And thank goodness, too, they're teasing us least as we record this, they're teasing us with when the Punisher release date is going to be and whatnot. But it's been great having Fred there in co-pilot seat for his feedback. Lo, these many episodes.
I've been impressed with Fred keeping up with us. You know, he's playfully teased us in the past, you know, called us a couple of speedy guys. And, you know, we really take to heart how much people clamor. You know, every morning when I check my social media and the number of messages across Facebook and Twitter from our listeners, you know, asking, you know, when's this going to be out? When are you guys going to talk about that? And, you know, 159 podcasts in 2018 as a benchmark. Let's meet it, if not exceed it, this year. So thanks for listening, Fred. Thanks, everybody else, for staying with Fantastic Geek.
So, Pete, a couple of questions that Fred brought up. I dare say that we can kind of lump them together since it's about similar family members. Is Chase gone from the Runaways as a group forever? And is Sick Vic a boy ploy to get Chase home?
I think Chase, of course, will rejoin our Runaways. I think what he started, though, they will also begin to question whether they should stay, and the group could maybe fracture further. And I really do think that it was not Victor that lied to Chase about being sick again.
Well, Pete, with these two episodes left, how can people be in touch with you to talk about these final episodes, talk about the season as a whole? How can people be in touch with you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKelaar, KetelaaR, 10,284 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, and Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek with the PH, all one word. Like it today.
Well, Pete, we will be back on Wednesday to talk the penultimate episode of the season. Don't forget the season finale then this Friday, and we'll be reviewing the season as a whole next week, Pete. With that, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final word.
You guys are in trouble. I put my foot on the gas, we almost got